Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. It is Wednesday, May 17th, 2017. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us as we enter into this new era, this new phase of reporting and investigation. And that's what we're doing. We have a new mandate. We're throwing down the gauntlet. We are now putting it in overdrive. I got an email from someone who said, you know, this person was really, it was interesting because a lot of comments about yesterday's show mirrored some of the emails that I got, and I got an email saying, I thought you were going to back out, basically, you know, because it's getting so ugly out there. I thought you were going to get it back out. Well, no, not at all. Never do that. Portions of Life's broadcast brought to you by Minuteman Stove, by the way. Minuteman Stove, folks. If you don't have one already, you need to get one. Minuteman Stove is the Cadillac of rocket stoves. Minuteman Stove, you know, they're 50 caliber ammo cans made in America, by Americans. They're fantastic. And I mean, absolutely fantastic devices if you need to cook other than your conventional way on a stove. And you may be needing to do that. Or perhaps you just like to camp. This is, regardless of the situation, this is the best stove for the money, the best stove for the purpose. Minuteman Rocket Stove. It's got a rubber seal, a gasket seal on the top. Again, a 50 caliber ammo can with the refractory insulation. And it travels clean. It stores clean, odor free. And it directs the heat right where you need it. It is a fantastic, absolutely fantastic product. MinutemanStove.com. And when you go there, check out some of the other products they have, including their fire starters. Second to none, let me tell you. Second to none. And, of course, their, Joe likes their cooking utensils, their pots and such, or pans, I should say, their cast iron type pans. So, square grill package. That's, you gotta check that out. Good stuff. MinutemanStove.com. Make sure you tell them the Hagman Report sent you. Alright, Joe, you and I, right before the show, we were talking about, of course, something that you and I have spoken about on this platform before. Mm-hmm. And that's the murder of Seth Rich. Folks, file in, take your seats if you're listening at home. Grab a notebook. It's important stuff. The very things that we have previously talked about on this show are being now talked about in the mainstream media. And as they're being discussed, they're being tamped down very hard by, well, shall we say, the usual suspects, the people on the left, the people who don't want this information to get out. Now, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, we are multi-state licensed private investigators. I've been one for 30 years. Actually, I think 32, maybe. I don't know. A long time. Three decades. Well over three decades. And we have developed a lot of contacts. You read between the lines. I've never seen. Well, I have, but when you see this level of fright among people who have information, it's always interesting. Joe, you and I are going to go through this because I think this is the most important matter right now. Because at the crux of all this, think, ladies and gentlemen, think about this. At the crux of everything, the narrative, the basis for Russian hacking claims is what? The release, the wiki release of the emails, right? this whole Russian narrative issue with respect to Donald Trump, where did this originate? Where? Well, it began, at least in most accepted circles, it began with the leaks by the DNC, or from the DNC. Now, you will recall, perhaps you will recall, a couple of things here. WikiLeaks published emails, the Podesta emails, among others, DNC emails, that as a consequence, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was resigned, and the emails were suggestive, or more than that, they were showing proof, if you will, that there was an attempt, or a very successful attempt, to take Bernie Sanders off the top of the Democratic ticket in favor of Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch, the yak, Clinton. Do we have a yak up? We don't have a yak up. No, no. Eric Tech.
Never want to see that again.
Never want to see that again, Joe?
No.
No. No. All right. So at the epicenter of all of this is that Russian, at the epicenter of the Russian narrative is, of course, this hack. Now, you will recall that, that James Comey had said to the DNC, show us the servers. We'll investigate. And the DNC said, no, no, that's okay. That's okay. In fact, we're going to bring in our own cybersecurity specialist. And that, of course, is CrowdStrike. Now, keep that in the back of your mind. Why is this all important to what's taking place today? Because this is going to serve, or this is serving as the on-ramp to the impeachment. And this is going to happen. They are going to attempt to impeach Donald J. Trump. And they're doing a good job of really hitting him hard, the leftist media. Okay. Doing a very good job of hitting him hard and polluting his reputation among the American people. But here's.
Now, if I can, yes, real quick, I want to jump in because something else happened today that I found kind of interesting. But we'll get back to Seth Rich, back to the Russia stuff that's been in the news. Yes. Putin made some comments that kind of went, nobody really picked up on them. And I like the way he summarized. Yeah, he said he had proof and offers a transcript to people who believe Trump shared some kind of classified information. He said
that. No, those are two separate issues, but they're connected. Right. But go ahead.
But what Putin said, I found, more accurate than what we find in our own media. He called it political schizophrenia and that Trump was not allowed to do his job properly. And then he goes on to say this, it's hard to imagine what else these people who generate so much nonsense and rubbish can dream up next.
Yes.
Referring to media and U.S., unnamed U.S. politicians. What surprises me is that they are shaking up the domestic political situation using anti-Russian slogans. Either they don't understand the damage they are doing to their own country, in which case they are simply stupid, or they understand everything, in which case they are dangerous and corrupt. I thought that summarized pretty nicely what was actually happening.
Yeah, indeed.
In politics and in the media.
And this is all part of the larger picture. And I do believe, based on my sources, my investigation, as well as open source information that has already been discussed by a wide number of people, from Hannity to Limbaugh to Alex Jones and Roger Stone and other citizen journalists. Look, this is all over the new media, and it's beginning now to permeate the conservative media, as well as the liberal media or progressive media, to the extent that they want this story just forever tamped out. So at the epicenter of this, of course, is the Russian narrative. Springing forth from that, of course, or as a consequence, or at the epicenter of that issue, is the DNC hack. I submit to you, the DNC was never hacked, which is why they refused to turn their servers over to the FBI for their inspection. Instead, they bring in CrowdStrike to do that for them. Now, here is the origins. So if they weren't hacked, where did WikiLeaks get the emails? To be precise, and if you've got a notepad, paper there, just take some notes here. Because this is raw investigative information sourced, not just, and you I suppose you could probably piece this together, open source, but this is all in one place. The DNC was well, let me back up here. At issue, of course, is the hack versus a leak. A leak, of course, is much different than a hack. A hack suggests intrusion into the computers. A leak, of course, suggests that somebody within the DNC or close to somebody within the DNC had obtained, secured, perhaps put a thumb drive in a computer, downloaded a database of emails, and then given that those emails to, of course, WikiLeaks or an intermediary. And I submit this is exactly what happened. I believe, I'm going to give you my hypothesis, my professional opinion, based on a lot of research, a lot of investigation, a lot of conversations, believe me, a lot of conversations. People who don't want to go on the record, people who are saying, no, I can't do this. But there are people right now being thrown under the bus, proverbial bus right now, including but not limited to Rod Wheeler, who's the private investigator working on behalf of the family of Seth Rich, independent of the actual spokesman for the family. But here's what I believe happened. I believe that Seth Rich had a problem, more than one problem, actually, at the DNC, where he worked on computer programs to assist voters to make it easier for people to get to the polls. That was his job. But Seth Rich was involved heavily in the IT business. And by the way, folks, I'm very well aware of George Webb's investigation. I urge everyone to follow George Webb, W-E-B-B, on YouTube. He does touch on this, but this is a lot bigger. And some of this information, of course, comes from our own sources. So having said that, Seth Rich worked in the IT area at the DNC. He had some problems. And he had observed, in my professional opinion, he had observed some misbehavior, some fraud even, perhaps, within the DNC. And it centered around the activities of the upper echelon of the DNC. Think about that for a second. The upper echelon of the DNC, Democratic National Committee, and in addition to Hillary Clinton, were engaged in activities that I believe Seth Rich found not just offensive, but perhaps criminal in nature. So, here's what we know. We know that 44,053 emails and 17,761 email attachments spanning from June of 2015 through May of 2016 were handed off to an individual in Washington, D.C., most likely via thumb drive or, you know, one of those, I guess they're called thumb drives. That individual had then given the thumb drive to Mr. McFadden, who had worked for, or who had the co-founder of WikiLeaks, okay, McFadden, who has since passed away from lung cancer at the age of 76. That data then made its way to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks published the 44,053 emails and 17,761 email attachments. Based on everything I've been able to determine, Seth Rich was the leaker, was the person who had taken the emails. Now, this is, again, understand this. This is my working hypothesis. I cannot tell you that this is fact. I cannot take this to a court of law. But this is my professional belief based on a lot of backstory investigations and investigation and contacts with sources. Seth Rich, I believe, had given this again to an intermediary. There's a couple of people involved here. Then to McFadden from WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks got it, and hence the release of the emails. Email number. On February 22nd, 2015, email number 36. 0-8-2. You have to understand as well the backdrop to this. The DNC and the party itself and staffers and the administration had a problem with leaks back in, well, since day one. And it's been plaguing all administrations. But on February 22nd, 2015, email number 36082, you can look this up on WikiLeaks, John Podesta, from the desk of John Podesta, wrote to another individual about the leaks and about leakers. I am definitely for making an example of a suspected leaker, whether or not we have any real basis for it. Did you hear what I just said? That's from John Podesta. A year and five months prior to the murder of Seth Rich. Okay, so they're having problems with leaks. Then, bam, they get hit with a huge leak. Not a hack, but a leak. It's published by WikiLeaks. On July 10th, 2016, this is a condensed version. At 4:19 a.m., shortly before 4:19 a.m., the shot spotters in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of Washington D.C. picked up some automatic gunfire, or I'm sorry, some semi-automatic gunfire. It is presumed gunfire, to be sure. Some say it was semi-automatic, or perhaps a couple of shots in close succession. Police responded, arrived in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of Washington, D.C. at 4:19 a.m. on the morning of July 10, 2016, where they found Seth Conrad Rich, 27 years old, lying there with two shots in the back. He was shot twice in the back. Again, Seth Rich, an employee of the DNC, in their IT department, working programming and code, and had access to all of the computers, servers as well. He was found to be conscious at the time. Statements were made. I don't have 100% accuracy on this with respect to his level of how coherent he actually was. But one source within the police department said, yeah, he was conscious. And in fact, conscious at the hospital. He was shot or found at 4:19 a.m., transported to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 5:57 a.m. that morning. Now, it was the following month in August where Julian Assange from WikiLeaks implied that Seth Rich was in fact the source for the DNC leaks, the emails. He didn't say as much, but my goodness, if you look at the transcripts from the Assange interview with Sean Hannity and memorialized elsewhere, you'd have to be a complete moron not to understand what Assange is trying to tell you. Well, Assange put up a reward, $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the murder or murderers. Republican lobbyist Jack Berkman put up $130,000. It's like $150,000 plus right now in rewards. Now, it's my understanding, based on conversations of earlier today, there are people listening to this broadcast right now who are, shall we say, within arm's reach of people who could very well provide information to collect that reward. Intentional pause. All right. Now, in August of 2016, Alice Kim, the head of the spokesperson for the Department of DC Police Department, had urged people to come forward as well and provide information. Now, within 96 hours of the shooting, the FBI and the police department both had absolute verification from actually just before Seth Rich expired. I want to be careful with my terminology here. The police responded to Seth Rich's home in D.C., where they confiscated or secured a computer and other electronic devices. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. At which time, they underwent forensic examination. This is by the FBI, not the D.C. police, but by the FBI. They underwent for forensic examination, and it was confirmed, according to my sources, and I believe you're going to hear this on open source media. I don't know this to be 100% fact, but I do know what my sources said. 100% verification that would link Seth Rich to the leaks of the 44,053 emails and 17,761 attachments to WikiLeaks, with two hops in between.
It's crazy.
Okay, now hold on. It gets worse. On August 11th, 2016, Seth Rich, their family spokesman, for Seth Rich, was named to be Brad Bauman. Brad Bauman happens to be, and listen to this, a professional Democratic crisis PR consultant with the Pastorum Group. Did you hear me? Professional Democratic PR crisis, or crisis PR consultant with the Pastorum Group. Heavily connected to the DNC. That's who the Rich family spokesman is.
Is that why you think the family... But what do you think the family's motivation is here to dismiss the findings of the PI to...
No.
They didn't hire the PI.
And that's another important fact. We haven't come to that yet. Rod Wheeler is the D.C. PI involved in the investigation. Former homicide detective in D.C. Rod Wheeler was hired by a third party to act on behalf of the Rich family, who allegedly... Now, Rod Wheeler is no... Let me tell you something. He's not stupid. He's absolutely not stupid. He entered into this contract. He's not being paid by the Rich family because they don't have the money. And they also have Brad Bauman saying, you know what, the police are doing a fine job, you know, stay out of it. And don't forget the timeline here. Again, I just want to remind people, July 10th was when Seth Rich was murdered. July 22nd, 2016, WikiLeaks published additional internal DNC emails. And again, that set of emails was exposing the DNC, where they were stopping Sanders from the party nomination, and resulted in the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But I digress. And by the way, the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz are being sued in a class action lawsuit. But again, that's just kind of anecdotal information or supplemental information. And it's also important to understand, too, the DNC never allowed the FBI to examine the DNC, the computer servers. DNC instead hired CrowdStrike. And CrowdStrike, and I just want to kind of follow this line and then get back to Bauman and Wheeler. DNC hired CrowdStrike, which said that Russia was involved in a hack, and that involved the Ukraine artillery. They allegedly had to walk that back. And bottom line is this. Their findings with respect to the hack of the DNC is at best questionable. Now, very quickly, I know we're running out of time, but folks, Joe,
two minutes.
I know. Okay. So the situation is this with respect to Rod Wheeler. Rod Wheeler is, again, the PI that's looking at this case yesterday or the day before came out and said a source just verified exactly what I said with respect to the forensic examination. However, the FBI told Rod Wheeler, look, the PI, Rod Wheeler, the FBI said, hey, we don't know where the computers are, or the computer and other devices are. We believe it's with the DC police. The DC police said the same thing. We don't know where they are. We think the FBI has it. So no one knows where these computers are or the devices are. Comey figures into this. Comey figures deeply into this. However, I'm going to just not go there. I'm going to be on Alex Jones tomorrow, InfoWars tomorrow at 1 o'clock between now and, well, within the next 14 hours. I should have some additional information on this, and whatever I do, I will be talking with on providing this on the InfoWars platform.
As well as we can pick up where we left off today for people who might not have time to get that information there tomorrow. Because this is really important to get all this out, and you did a good job of putting this together.
I did that make sense, folks? Joe, I mean,
yeah.
But the issue here
and the body camera footage from the police, that the police report show that he was alive when the police found him, unresponsive, not even knowing he was shot, according to the police report. Camera footage was...
He knew something happened to him, and his face was bruised, his hands were bruised, knees, indicative of a struggle. He was fighting. And then he turned around, apparently to run away from his assailants, plural, and was shot twice in the back.
But the police body camera footage is missing, as well as his computer has turned up missing. And that's all very suspect to me, as it should be to anybody with this kind of a high-profile case. It was high-profile since the day it happened. And I wonder what other information we can get, if any, from the police, from the FBI, and as the PI said, basically, you're shut down at every turn when you bring up the DNC connections. When we come back, we'll be right back after these short messages. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
We'll be right back.
folks, to this edition of the Hagman Hagman Report. Just a recap, some of the things that I didn't mention. Of course, the murder of Seth Conrad Rich, born January 3rd, 1989 to July 10th, 2016, age 27 at the time of his death. The family is, or the family spokesman, let me just be clear on this, appears to be throwing the PI and others under the bus pretty heavily, by saying that, there's no evidence and the, you know, there's, this is the fodder of conspiracy theorists. And a lot of people are, picking up on that. And that's from family spokesman Brad Bauman. And I've dealt with a number of homicide victims and homicide cases in my day, unsolved in particular. The emotions run high, and a PI, you gotta understand, PIs are generally welcome in unsolved homicides. However, there's the family factor there. You've gotta be very, very careful with the family. And knowing the reputation of this, former DC homicide detective, Rod Wheeler, in the fact that what he said was, yeah, the feds have the information. Another, actually a federal source came out, and this was, subsequent to Rod Wheeler's statement, a federal source came out and verified the fact that the forensic analysis of Seth Rich's computer did verify the communications between WikiLeaks and their assignees, shall we say, and Seth Rich, that referenced, and again, I've got to be careful here with the wording, reference the transfer of information from the DNC via Seth Rich to an intermediary to McFadden and then to Assange. Okay. Now, a federal source also stated to Rod Wheeler that we were told, and I quote, we were told to stand down on this case. That's an excerpt from a statement made to Rod Wheeler. The Rich family spokesman Brad Bauman, of course, now is really on the, is really pushing this, you know, pushing this conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy theory. This is all fodder. However, the information is strong on the other side. And I must say this, the stakes are very high because you unravel this, you're also going to unravel the Russian narrative. So the forensic report of, Seth Rich's computer, was done. It, again, within 96 hours after his murder, it showed that he made contact with WikiLeaks through not just Gavin McFadden, who passed away on October 27th of last year from lung cancer, but another individual, which the information then made it to WikiLeaks, by the way. And it was via London. And of course, 12 days after Seth's murder, the release, WikiLeaks published the internal DNC emails that dealt with Sanders, the party nomination, as well as Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So there was information that was before and after the murder, the 12 days subsequent to the murder, of course, very interesting. And then CrowdStrike comes in at the same time or concurrent with this mess and blames the leak on a hack. And I just will add this, Vault 7, the significance of Vault 7 with respect to WikiLeaks lays out the foundation for hacking tactics and code that get into misdirected attribution, a phrase that we've talked about in the past. In other words, making something look kind of like murdering, murdering your wife and blaming it on your neighbor. Okay. In other words, making it look like someone else did a crime, misdirected attribution. And then, of course, we have the February 2015 email number 36082 from John Podesta, saying, I'm definitely for making an example of a suspected leaker, whether or not we have any real basis for it. So all of this combined, you understand how absolutely incredibly important this is. And this is why there's such a backlash a civil war or a war taking place within our country at the highest levels of our country that involved the Justice Department, the FBI, and in this case, the D.C. Police Department, which is just incredible. That the fact that we are in this fight, and let me just tell you this, all right? Murder tends to put a damper on people who want to leak stuff, right? Just saying. So there you have it, and I believe that. And again, let me just fast forward to March 24th, 2017. A source of the Voice of America News, two authors. So there's Pete Kobus and, no, I can't pronounce the other name. Their headline on March 24th, 2007, or 2017, cyber firm rewrites part of disputed Russian hacking report. Meaning to say, they're walking back the Russian hacking story with respect to the Ukraine, the IISS December 2016 Ukraine incident. And this, by the way, was also referenced, the CrowdStrike, their claims, the whole DNC hacking, as well as that particular narrative, was memorialized in the Senate testimony of James Comey. Back in, subsequent to the murder of Seth Rich, but prior to the inauguration, I believe. So there you have James Comey and his involvement. However, the involvement by James Comey goes deeper because of other relations, which we'll get into at a later time. But you've got basically the nuts and bolts of this story. And I think hopefully I did a good job in summarizing it, folks. But this is extremely deep and this is extremely important. And this is the stuff that people do get killed over.
Absolutely right. Coming up with us now is Robert Griswold from Ready Made Resources.
Situational awareness, brother.
Yeah. And we're going to get into some things with Robert and, Robert, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here. Good listening to you, and I always enjoy coming back here and talking about what's dear to my heart. And I think we're living in times right now where we're all going to have to take a look at what we do, how we do it, and possibly the ramifications and repercussions of our actions on social media. Just today, the anguish filled my heart the thought that there's a good chance our president is either going to have to step down or be removed from office. And the violence that's going to pursue this nation. There was an article on the Daily Beast, and it talks about, it's up there today, Civil War 2017. And we are there. I mean, the setting is ripe to have half of America, which hates the other half of America, commit violence on that half of America. You know, Abraham Lincoln, as he approached 1860, pondered the scripture, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And if that scripture ever had an applicable meaning or an applicable application in our century, it is right now. We are a house divided, and the people that want to bring about this globalist government, that want to enslave all of humanity, are active, and they will destroy this nation, and an untold amount of people will suffer, probably die, in the process of them obtaining their goals. So we're there right now, and each of us that are on social media, that have any kind of footprint in the public arena, are going to have to reevaluate our awareness of our environment in which we live, because these people will, they're very underhanded, they're very devious, they move about obviously as with masks on, and they will use that anonymity to come and attack you, your family, your friends, and so we are going to have to step up on our game and be aware of their motives and be ready to handle them should they occur towards us or our family or someone we love.
Robert Griswold, folks, and we asked him to come on, talk about situational awareness. I cannot think of any better topic right now than today, in advance of perhaps upcoming hostilities, even in your city. But the fact of the matter is, I care about my family. I care about you as listeners and viewers. I care enough to have the best of the best, and I believe Robert Griswold, his company, the best of the best, to come on and let's talk how we can best prepare and protect ourselves. Because if we're not prepared, and if we don't know how to protect ourselves, what to look for, what to have in the coming days, then we're fools. Ready Made Resources is the website. Folks, please, I beg of you, not for any profit motive, but for your safety, your security. Please be prepared. Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
You know, I make no bones about it. I'm a capitalist. I run this business because this provides a living for my family. It goes back to Adam Smith. Why does the butcher cut meat? He cuts meat to feed his family. But I'm telling you, there's a passion in my heart for this country and the people that are in it, the people that want to do and see good things happen right now. And we are going to have to suffer, I think, tremendously in the next coming months and years if we are at all to gain our country back again. I'm not sure we can. I don't know the outcome of it. I don't know what history will deal. But the fact is that what we do with ourselves can make the determination whether our family goes through this difficult time. You know, I've traveled over 40-some countries, and I'm telling you, situational awareness will keep you alive. Being aware of your environment will keep you alive. Being unaware of your environment will get you killed or injured, raped, murdered, or whatever. It is time that we do it. And I want to make it clear, situational awareness is not something that you can read in a book and then say, well, I've checked that box. I know I'm supposed to do this, that, and the other thing. And then think that you're situationally aware, a situationally aware person. Situational awareness is like muscle. It has muscle memory. You have to exercise it on a daily basis to keep it in tune. You have to do the practices and go through the routines of being situationally aware on a regular basis. Because if you think that you're going to wait until you need it to use it, it's like any other skill. You can watch a Bruce Lee movie all you want, but you will never be Bruce Lee unless you go to a dojo and practice. You know, you can buy a gun, but you will never be a Travis Haley or a John Lovell unless you practice with it. Situational awareness is the same thing. Unless you take the time and put it into your life and incorporate it into your day-to-day movements, it is not going to do you any good. And you'll find yourself being the victim of people who observe you, watch you, and are willing to wait you out and strike at the right moment. Now, I don't want to incite fear in anybody's heart, but I do want to incite what God put in Noah's heart, a holy fear. You know, fear gets a bad rap. Fear is a good thing. Fear will keep you alive. I have traveled throughout most of the Middle East, in fact, all of it. And I've traveled throughout Asia and North Africa. Fear will keep you alive. It is that sense that we have that tingles in the back of our mind and up our spine or whatever you want to say that says danger is near. Pay attention. And I think today, reading the headlines about our president, our country, seeing the left move on our country, moving against freedom of speech, moving against our president, if you do not have some kind of tingling and apprehension going up your spine right now, I'd say that you're pretty much asleep and there's really not much hope for you. So there's certain things that we can do if we are willing to incorporate them on a day-to-day basis into our life to make sure that should harm try to visit us, we will be aware with it, we will be aware of it, and we will be able to deal with it. One of the most well-known things, and I would tell everyone to go online and type this in, and you can read about it. You can also download an image. It's called OODA loop, OODA, then loop, and it means to observe, orient, decide, and act. Again, that's how we do. We go outside. You know, I had one of my best friends was in law enforcement. And he trained me very well that if I walk outside of a building, if I walk outside of my house, if I get out of my car, the first thing I do is to look around me. I just don't walk out with the cell phone in my hand. I would tell people to get rid of that thing when you're outside. If you're walking down the road, typing in on your cell phone, playing a video game or texting, you are the perfect victim. If I was a criminal looking for a victim, I would choose you because you are completely situationally unaware and you make a perfect victim. And you've come out of a store, you might have something with you that I could steal, whatever. So just put the cell phone away and learn to observe. When you walk out of a building, look up at the building ridgeline. Look out at the cars. Remember where you're parked. Look what kind of cars are parked next to you. I mean, is it a nice car or is it a maybe not a nice car? You start forming evaluations based on your observation. So the first thing that we need to train ourselves to do is to observe. Some very good friends, I'll put it that way, taught me a little drill, and I'll share it with you. And that was to get two friends together and put on a movie. Now, it can be any movie you want. Action movies are good, maybe even the romance movies, whatever you like. And while you're watching this movie, one friend is taking notes on a piece of paper, and the other friend is taking mental notes. And the goal of the drill is to not pay attention to the two guys in the middle of the screen fighting, or the guy and the girl making love, or whatever they're doing, because that's where your eye wants to focus. The purpose of the drill is to pay attention to all the incidentals in the movie. The shadows. Shadows can tell what time of day it is. What kind of cars are going by? You can make an evaluation of a neighborhood. What kind of people are in it? What color clothes are they wearing? What do they look like? All those little incidences that go in a movie, the person who's actually being going to be drilled is having to take mental notes of those incidences in the movie because your eye wants to get distracted. I mean, obviously you want to watch the two guys fight or the, you know, whatever, the guy kiss the girl, whatever. And that's the distraction. But very seldom does evil come at us head on. It usually approaches us from our flanks. And so we really need to train ourselves to pay attention to the things that we really don't need to see because the bad guys play on that. And we need to train our mind and our actions to see those things that we don't need to see. Now, that movie thing will do a very good job if you do that over again. You're going to find it very fatiguing to do it. And so get some friends together and just put that into practice and then see how much of it you can remember. Again, everything in that movie will tell a story. Pictures on a wall. Sometimes you can find anomalies in a movie where something's wrong, and that's kind of a fun thing to do that the cast coordinator didn't get it correct. But if you learn to pay attention to those things, then when you step outside, you start to train your mind to look at things that you normally would not see. And again, your cell phone's your greatest enemy. Unless, I will share this with you. If you have a cell phone and you black out the screen, it makes a perfect reflective source to look at your six. I do it all the time. If you're at the gym and you're on the treadmill or something, you can set that cell phone up and you can see what's behind you. If you're walking down the street, you can look at your cell phone with a screen blacked out and you can see what's behind you. You can look all around with it. So if in that case, if you're using it for situational awareness, it looks normal to have a cell phone in your hand, and you can use it as a reflective surface to see what's on your six or in your flanks. And so that way our cell phone can be very good and looks perfectly normal to walk down the street anymore with a cell phone in your hand looking oblivious. But at that point, you're using it to watch your six and to make sure you're not being followed or something not is coming to sneak up on you.
But Bob, it beats, and just a little levity here, it beats the heck out of, what was the movie, The Jerk? I don't know. Little rearview mirrors on our glasses, you and me. You know, we have glasses. So I can't remember. Anyway, you know,
beats glass, really, if you deal with anybody in the intelligence community, if you're doing any kind of operational thing where you're doing surveillance or counter-surveillance, glass really becomes a very, very good friend to you, because every piece of glass, whether it's in a car or plate glass and a thing, it's a reflective surface. It allows you to see what's behind you without looking like you're behind you. Believe me, it works very, very well, and you can play like you're totally oblivious to everything. But again, if you train your mind to do this, it's not something that you're going to do when you need to do it, unless you do it when you don't need to do it. So train your mind to use those reflective surfaces. Start tomorrow, start tonight, and that way you'll start to develop this situational awareness, being aware of what's behind you. Now, my wife and I play a drill at times. Well, I'll just take the rearview mirror and move it out of sight and ask her what color car's behind us. We should always know who's following us. And those are kind of drills that allow you to do the observe part of that OODA loop. Again, I encourage people to go online, type in OODALOOP, OODA loop. It was developed by a U.S. Army colonel. And it teaches, that's the basis of all situational awareness. If you go to any school on situational awareness, you're going to hear that word, OODA loop. And so the first thing we have to do, and it's the hardest thing to start to do, is to observe. Well, I have fun time at times just watching how people don't observe. They're just totally ignorant of their environment. They're perfect victims. They're just waiting for something bad to happen to them because, again, for one reason or another, they are totally ignorant of their environment. So we go from there to observe, and then we have to orient. Orient says, what is going on around me? How is it possible to affect me? And so we have to, once we observed something happening, it takes us, you know, you've heard the four color code warning thing, white, yellow, orange, and red. You know, we walk, say, being good people, we're walking around in that yellow, just being observant. And all of a sudden we see something we don't like and it moves us up a notch or two. We have to orient to what we see that we don't like. It might be some bad thug looking guys walking down the street and you're walking head on into them. You've observed that. You have to orient to it. Do you want to let them walk past? If you got your wife or your girlfriend with you, do you want them to walk by you on the sidewalk? Or do you have to orient to that situation and then decide what you're going to do? That's the next thing. OOD, decide. Do I need to act? What do I need to do? What are my options here? And at this point, again, if you don't train yourself to think this way, you're going to freeze up at that moment. You're just going to say, "Well, I can't do this," and you're going to get paralyzed with fear on one level or another, and you won't orient yourself. You won't decide to do anything, and then you'll be at the mercy of if they're good, really bad people, or if they're just bad looking people. And so you'll need to decide what to do, and then the last part of that OODA loop is to act. Again, what do I do? Okay, we've seen them coming. I see maybe a gun or a knife or whatever on them, and they're coming towards me. I move away from them. They start following me. Then I'm going to have to make a decision to act. And that's probably, you know, one of the harder things to do if you decide your life is being threatened, how you're going to act. But, again, you need to commit this to memory, because I want to say it again. If you wait until you need to be situationally aware, you will not be situationally aware. This is something I want to encourage everyone who's listening to this program to start putting these things into practice. I mean, it's kind of fun. Just get your cell phone out, walk down the street, and use it as a mirror to look behind you. Start using if you're walking through a parking lot, the glass on cars, the plate glass in front of the building. Start using those surfaces to observe what's going on around you so you'll know your environment. If you know your environment, you're much less likely to become a victim. These people that we're going to be dealing with, and I think in a coming civil war, if you have any kind of footprint on, like I said, on social media, you run the possibility of them following you or following you home or following you to work or whatever, and with nefarious desires for you to hurt you or one way or another, if you're in that position to where you have social exposure and you've said things that could be taken as an offense where it offends people, then you better start developing these techniques immediately, because as we see this destruction of our republic right before our eyes, there's going to be a lot of people hurt, in my opinion. I don't know how you do that. And Hagmans, I am a person of peace. I tell, be at peace with all men. If everything that is within us to be at peace, we're to be at peace with people. We are never to be the antagonist. We react to violence, but we never want to be the person perpetrating the violence for violence sake.
You're right.
I do believe that violence is coming to our door. There are, you know, there are other things you can do to be situational. Again, I mentioned driving. My wife was actually, when we were first married, actually stalked, and she was a very beautiful woman. And there was a guy who was stalking her, and he actually took notes of where she'd been, what she'd been doing, what color clothes she'd been wearing. He was stalking her. And that's when I started getting involved in this years and years ago. She started learning some of the techniques. Just even as simple as 4 right turns when you're driving a car. You know, if somebody's following you, you've just driven in a circle, and they've followed you in a circle, and it's probably a pretty good indication you're being followed.
Hey, Bob.
And so,
to interrupt you. We're coming up against the break. Can we hold you over for about 5 minutes on the other side of the break?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Thank you. Folks, we're talking with Robert Griswold of Ready Made Resources. He is our guest. We're talking about situational awareness, and you couldn't have a more important topic when we look at the craziness that is going on in our world and the instability. Never know where that will take us, and the situational awareness is so important because it means the difference between life and death in a survival situation. We'll be right back with Robert Griswold from Ready Made Resources right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the GMAG Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super GMAG Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest
Precious Plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.